The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Have the changes in the banking industry affected you? With the looming possibility that your local bank branch might disappear and more web, mobile, and social technologies, what will the changes mean for you and your business? Welcome to Breaking Banks with your host, Brett King. The possibility that banking is no longer a place you go, but just something that you do, has become very real. Now, here is Brett King.
Welcome to Breaking Banks. It's another great week. We have some great guests. Part of the theme of the show is obviously around disruption. And we often talk about retail banking. But there's obviously a large amount of entrepreneurs and small businesses that also rely on banking and lending and other facilities to ensure that their business works, that employees get paid, that their business can run. And increasingly in recent times, it's been a challenge for small businesses. There's been a number of banks who have been retreating from the SME space. Lending has got tougher despite the injection of capital into the market during the financial crisis from governments. This money didn't find its way into liquidity into the market that ended up with small businesses at least. And so it's been pretty tough for small businesses as well. So how is technology changing the way small businesses get access to funding, from crowdsourcing like Kickstarter to P2P-based lending initiatives? That's the theme of the show today. First up, I'd like to invite Ami Kassar. I hope I pronounced that right, Ami.
Close enough, Brett.
Well, you feel free to correct me.
Ami Kassar, but that's okay.
Okay.
So how are you today? I'm glad to be here.
Okay, so maybe it's just my Aussie accent, you know. welcome to the show. Now, Ami, you're a blogger on Wall Street Journal. You have your own advisory firm as well, and you're doing some work in this space. You're a real champion for the small business when it comes to credit and lending and access to cash and things like that. Tell us a little bit about your business that you're running, and also how you got into blogging and writing for the Wall Street Journal.
Yeah, so our business is multi-funding, and what we do is we work with small business owners and entrepreneurs across the country to help them figure out the best loan alternatives for them in the marketplace. The reality of today's situation is that it's not as simple as walking into your local bank branch anymore and applying for a line of credit or a term loan and getting a loan. The banks have tightened up. The business environment has gotten a lot tougher, and at the same time, we've seen a plethora of new options and new alternatives out there in the marketplace by alternative lenders. And we feel that it's more important than ever, as it's gotten more and more confusing, for small business owners and entrepreneurs to get sound counsel and to find the best solutions for them at the different stages of their business.
And you're a small business owner yourself, right?
Sure.
Right. So, if I'm starting out on this journey today, you know, one of the problems I have is when I start a small business, I don't have any credit history. And in the United States, you know, it's even tough to open a bank account without credit history these days. So, you know, as a small business entrepreneur starting up, does it mean you need to rely on your own personal credit history, or is there a way that you can start to build as an entrepreneur, a small business, and get access to cash as you start to grow? Because, that's the key, isn't it? You've got a small business that starts to be successful. You need capital to grow. And, it's tough. It's tough as a new business starting out to get access to capital.
Yeah, it's particularly tough for a new business starting out, with a few exceptions. And the reality is that, especially at the beginning, all that's going to matter from your credit perspective is your personal credit, as well as what collateral that you might have available to make a loan. And as you go along and your business gets stronger, the lenders are definitely going to look at your business performance and see if the business is building any assets. But at that same time, it's going to be your personal credit that is going to have a definite impact on what loans you might be open and available to you most of the time.
Now, is it your view that obviously we've seen crowdfunding come into the mix of late and other new plays that have sort of emerged through the more social aspects of the web? But in respect to the business of lending, how do you think that technology is really changing access to credit for small businesses? What are some of the big things that have either happened in recent times or are emerging on the horizon for changing the way credit is made available to entrepreneurs?
Yeah, we haven't seen as of yet crowdfunding have, in my opinion, any material impact on the lending market at all. There are a couple of players playing around with it and exploring it, and I'm cautiously optimistic it will make a difference. The new technologies in terms of utilizing technology to leverage loans, you know, there are some new alternative lenders in the market that have built some fairly robust front-end engines like the OnDeck Capital. My issue is that at least at this point in the trajectory, the capital is still extremely expensive. And so it's well, on one hand, it's terrific that the innovation is there. On the other hand, there have to be ways to offer the loans at much longer amortizations that are being offered now and at much more reasonable rates to really make it, in my opinion, a beneficial, sustainable solution for small businesses and entrepreneurs. Mm.
So, you know, what are the hot topics that you feel impelled to write about with the Wall Street Journal? What keeps you up at night, or where do you see there's room to move?
Well, I think what's most important is transparency and clarity in the small business lending market. So the reality is that there are literally hundreds of quote-unquote banks now being run out of people's garages as entrepreneurs and lenders and hedge funds try to take advantage of the situation or the big dark hole left by the banks. Mm. And so in that process, what's happened is we've seen there's this huge onslaught, and many of them have products and pricing that is completely confusing, very difficult for the small business owner or entrepreneur to understand, and often catches them, and then it's very hard to get out. So in some ways, I'm concerned there's another bubble waiting to burst with all these alternative lenders, and the issue is to work very hard and diligently to get the rates, you know, down at affordable rates and get the pricing clear, simple, and transparent, so that if an entrepreneur is signing up for a 60% loan, again, that might be okay, but they should understand that's what they're signing themselves up for, and they should understand clearly how long they have to pay it back, so that there's no confusion in the market. And unfortunately now, it's like the wild, wild west out there.
Well, what sort of APR are we looking at for a small business entrepreneur seeking funding right now? What sort of rates are we looking at?
It's sort of I call it a bipolar world.
Right?
So, if you're one of the lucky few who's credit worthy and has got good cash flow, collateral, and credit, banks will try to give you money at 4%, 5%, 6%,
right.
And you're in a pretty good shape, and rates are very low, and there are a lot of opportunities. Unfortunately, for those who are not, there are also plenty of people lying to give you up money, but the rates can go anywhere from 15 to 18% APRs, as high as, I've seen them as high as 200% APRs.
Wow.
And the sad thing is most entrepreneurs don't even know what their rate is when they're getting it. So it's, and there are another dozen lenders coming onto the market every month or a dozen players in it. So, well, that's terrific on one hand that there's a lot of entrepreneurial activity around it. On the other hand, it feels like it's another bubble waiting to burst, and it really has to be thought about.
The spreads on the these lending is huge, isn't it? I mean, you know, because interest rates on deposit for small businesses are still under 1%, under 100 basis points these days. So when you've got a spread of 18%, that's someone's making money somewhere. It's not the small business.
And it's kind of the funny thing about it is that so many of these alternative lenders are borrowing money from hedge funds or et cetera at 8, 10, 12%. And then they're going out and lending it at 40, 50, 60% APRs. So the reality of the matter is they can afford huge loss rates. So it doesn't take a rocket scientist to lend if you know in your model you can afford 15 or 20% loss rates. The issue is that in the long run, that is not a sustainable model. I apologize, Brad, or it should not, in my opinion, be considered a mainstream model. There should always be a place in the market for subprime lending, but it should be thought of as such and not be the mainstream. It should be the alternative, not the norm.
Right. Now, I've got a, you know, we talk a lot on the show about financial inclusion, and we talk about the state of the U.S., you know, domestic market in respect to this problem, and that 25% of households are unbanked or underbanked. You know, what percentage, is it quantifiable in terms of what percentage of small businesses fly under the radar and don't really utilize the banking system? You'd think they would need to get paid, but you know, what percentage of small business that operates is underbanked, do you think, in the United States? Have you got an idea on that?
Well, part of the frustration for me, and I've written quite a bit about this, is that it's very hard to track because there's very little data that's consistent. So we will see some data out there, especially the big banks. They publish their small business lending reports, and they define the businesses having revenue of $20 million or less.
Yeah.
There are other reports by the FDIC that define it as having a loan size of $1 million or less. Then there are these hundreds of alternative lenders out there that don't report any data at all. Mm. And so it's like, it's particularly frustrating to me because access to capital for small business owners and entrepreneurs should be a vital indicator of ongoing economic recovery, and we should have ways to measure it and track it. And I'm yet to see one methodology that I think is statistically valid and tells the whole story, because everyone's using different definitions. There's not one agreed-upon definition of what even constitutes a small business.
Okay, great. So tell me about what you've been working on the last few months. I note that you've been having some meetings with Washington and other areas in terms of some of the House Small Business Committee and others. So you know, what are you doing to raise awareness on this front on a larger scale?
Yeah, well, we continue to work on a sort of a macro and a micro scale. On a micro scale, we, you know, try to fight the fight with every entrepreneur we work with to make sure that they're getting the best possible loan solutions for them. And on a macro scale, we continue with our writing and our research and our efforts, lobbying efforts in Washington to just try to continue to bring transparency to this issue and to help to advocate for the small businesses and entrepreneurs. Unfortunately, we don't know if too many people or companies or brands who really are fighting for the interests of the small business owner, and that's what we're trying to do.
Right. This is very, very interesting. In terms of the small businesses that you're working with, What do you think their capacity is for understanding the risks of taking on credit? And is part of the problem here that we need more education in the market about how best to use loans and when you should lend money? Is that part of the issue here?
I definitely think it's a big issue. You know, unfortunately, the reality is that many small business owners aren't even on top of their financial statements. We see countless small business owners who don't understand the loans that they already have, and in some cases, their financial statements are months behind. And yeah. So there's a huge problem, you know, with the small business and entrepreneur community in terms of really clear and concise accounting and understanding their financials and being on top of their game. And that's, you know, one of the things that makes it tough. You know, we often say, if a stranger walked down the street and asked you to borrow money, would you lend it to yourself? And without clean and good accounting, that makes it very difficult.
Yeah. And, you know, are the tools making it easier for that? You know, you would think... You sound like you've really suffered from the East Coast winter this week.
It finally nailed me.
Well, you know, I left Monday morning for the West Coast, and it was a beautiful Sunday. The sun was out; it was quite a nice day. And my kids got home in Connecticut that afternoon, and you know, they had a foot of snow they were playing with. So it certainly has been a classic East Coast winter week this week. So you are forgiven.
500,000 houses in our area still without power from the storm.
Where are you based?
Philadelphia.
Philly, yeah, I saw that. So so what about the, you know, we see some predatory efforts here as well. There's been a lot of criticism of payday lending for individuals here, but of course you made clear earlier in the interview that we see a lot of this. Is this a problem of regulation as well, do you think, or is it more about raising awareness?
You know, I think it's the regulatory issue is always elusive, because I would argue that when the regulators slam down on the credit card business, created this huge cash advance business that many small business owners, the regulators don't even understand. So
yeah.
It seems like it's a continuously moving target. What I would like to do is I would like to see the industry self-regulate and take some standards and commit to clear and transparent pricing for their loans.
So now, I like that you raise the issue of the credit cards, because a lot of small business owners, this is literally how they're funding their businesses when they start up, especially as they grow and they're purchasing inventory and those sort of things. And, of course, the APRs on credit cards are not very attractive.
Sure, but the difference between an APR is a revolver. So even if you're paying 20% interest in a credit card, It serves in many ways like a line of respect, a line of credit, and you've got the time to pay it down, and you can make the minimum payments, and you can slowly grow out of it. Mm. That's largely being replaced in the market by these cash advance loans that will lend you the money, but you got 6 months to pay it back, and you have to pay it back daily, and you have to start right away, the principal and the interest. And then many people in like 3.5 months, because it's getting so tight and tough, they renew and they do it again. And after a few of these, they're in serious trouble.
So, yeah.
So it's almost like the big bad credit card companies got eaten up, and it got replaced with something that, in my opinion, is in many cases worse for the market. And, And that's the innovation is the technology around that. I'm not all that impressed with the innovation in the respect that it's the model is in my opinion not sustainable for the long term, because the amortizations are so short on most of these loans.
Great. Well, I mean, what I'd like to do is I'd like to go to a quick break, and after the break, I'd like to talk to Victoria from Cabbage, and this is a team that's doing some really interesting things on the data side of at least credit decisioning for small businesses. And then at the end of the show, I'd like you to come back and sort of help us sort of think about the future, where this is going. Can you stick around for the end of the show?
Sure.
Great.
Sure.
So you're with Breaking Banks, Ami Kassar, who is a blogger and writer for both the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal. And we'll be back right after this short break.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
Attend Payments 2014 to meet the forward-thinking leaders and disruptors who are transforming how we pay and get paid. Get a glimpse into the next wave of payments innovations and challenges through fast-paced interactive demonstrations, educational sessions, and a buzzing exhibit hall. Register now at payments.nacha.org. Payments 2014 is presented by NACHA, the Electronic Payments Association, the recognized leader in payment system education. The Payments Conference, transform imagination into strategic innovation. Register today at payments.nacha.org.
We're always talking business.
Talk to an expert.
Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to Breaking Banks, featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to breakingbanksradio@gmail.com. Now, back to the program.
You are back with Breaking Banks, and you guys know me. I'm Brett King. I'm your host. We are talking small business lending and some of the new technologies and some of the issues in this space, particularly here in the United States, but these issues translate, of course, to other markets as well. At this time, what I'd like to do is introduce you all to Victoria. Victoria Traeger, is that how I pronounce it, Victoria? Your family name?
Sure.
Victoria is the CMO, Chief Marketing Officer of Kabbage, Inc. And Kabbage is one of the leading technology and lending players in this market, in this space of small business finance right now. And, you know, one of the key things I really like about Kabbage, apart from the elements of the social elements of the tool and so forth, is that data and technology are a key component of the way they go through the decision-making process. And this is where some real intelligence is applied. So, Victoria, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Let me ask you, how has Kabbage built this business differently in terms of this credit decisioning process, and where does the technology come into play for you guys in terms of reducing your risk as an organization?
Sure. It's pretty dramatically different. So even before banks started suppressing their lending to small businesses, and that's been going on since 2008, the process of getting a bank loan has been a pretty clunky one. You would have to fill out many different forms, send the forms in, wait for a decision. All of that would normally take, 2 weeks to 4 weeks before you would get an answer. And yep. Small businesses need access to capital pretty quickly. And it's also kind of a backward way to do things. Business performance information. There's so much business performance information that is now stored in the cloud because small businesses, right, instead of using paper or even basic software, they've moved to using cloud services for things like their bookkeeping, their taxes, all of their e-commerce data. So there's been a massive explosion of information that is and data that's available. And Kabbage's mission is really to take that technology, apply technology, and combine that with all of our data analytics tool to democratize access to capital to small businesses. And instead of this clunky multi-week process, change it to a simple online process that literally takes 7 minutes. So remember how, you know, buying products before Amazon, you would have to go and search around a bookstore, and then they changed it into one click, which takes a minute. We basically do the same thing with your online application. You go to the Kabbage site, you connect your various business accounts, and we give you an answer in 7 minutes. So beginning to end, no more wow. forms to send in, nothing. We give you an answer, and then we make the funds available on the spot. And then in terms of what we're connecting to, what are all these different data sources? Well, we have literally dozens of them, but the big ones are basically everything that a business owner across every single sector would use to manage their business. So for e-commerce businesses, their PayPal data, their Amazon or eBay activity, QuickBooks data or Xero accounting data, shipping data with UPS. UPS is a major partner to the company. And then all your payment processing data, your financial accounts, the works. So our data sources are so broad that we cover basically everything that you as a small business use as part of being a small business. And all you do is connect that data source to Kabbage, give us explicit permission to pull the data in, and then we pull it in as part of our underwriting mechanism and get an answer to you within that 7-minute timeline.
It's fascinating. You know, I find it so ironic that when you go to a bank as a small business operator, and I've been in this situation, and they say, you know, the first thing they ask you for is 3 years of your financial history.
Right.
And I'm like,
right.
guys, you've got that. It's my bank statement. You know, it's like,
right.
how hard can it be to analyze how much cash comes in and how much cash comes out and whether I can service a loan? Like, no, we're going to see your tax returns.
I couldn't have said that better myself. We see all the business checking account data since we connect to that. So, yes, exactly. In fact, our CEO, Rob, he had several businesses that he started. And he had a tough time getting a bank loan, and that was exactly his frustration. They kept asking him for that data, and he said, well, just look in my checking account. You see the data yourself.
Yeah, exactly. So tell me about Kabbage as a business, how you've grown, how many small businesses are on the platform right now, what are your plans for 2014?
Yeah. We launched, company started in 2008, and the founders spent the first 3 years building this data platform, this capability to pull in real time various data sources, categorize that data, and act on it from a risk standpoint. So we did not launch in market to customers until mid-2011, so we've been in market for 2.5 years, and it's been a pretty amazing reception. The thing I would say I'm actually the most proud of, before I tell you our numbers, is the customer reception. So one of the things that we always strive for and measure every quarter is Net Promoter Score, what percent of our customers would recommend Kabbage, and it's pretty incredible. Our Net Promoter Score is 70%. And to give you a feel for an average,
great.
You know, what that means is 70% will recommend Kabbage, but in financial services, the average is 10%. So we're far, far above the average. The company has grown in that 2.5 year period where we have extended over $220 million to small businesses in that period of time. So pretty phenomenal growth.
And I see you guys have done really well with your raise as well. You've raised, according to Crunchbase, at least around $54 million in total venture funding right now, and debt of about $90 million, which supports or underwrites, of course, that lending. So
you
guys have done pretty well in the market.
Thank you.
It's But one of the things I think is really interesting about this is when we look at this problem and the problem that Ami was talking about in the first segment is that you guys took 3 years to build the platform before you started mm-hmm. to go out to market. This is not a...
Right.
This is not a problem that can be fixed quickly. It's not like, oh, yeah, well, it's a simple fix. We'll just put in some more data feed and, now we're good to go. This is really about changing the culture and the way you think about taking on risk as a lending organization, right?
Absolutely, but also radically changing the process for small businesses. I mean, I would say that banking is almost the last sector, maybe banking and insurance, are the two last sectors that have been untouched by technology. It's crazy. Why should it take you 4 weeks to get an answer? Why should you have to go pull all your tax forms when all of that data is available in the cloud? So what's most radical about it is changing the customer experience and streamlining it sort of for 2014. I mean, we're not in 1980.
Exactly. So tell me about some of the small businesses that are working with you guys and how Kabbage has helped them.
Sure. Well, I think one of the questions you asked me during the break, which I think is great, is how are the small business owners using this funding? And you'll see we spend a lot of our focus on educating the small business owners, really encouraging them to think about ROI. When they take Kabbage money, we actually have an ROI calculator and various educational tools that teach them to think about what's the return that you are getting on your investment. How are you investing this money to actually grow your business? And so one of the things we've done, and then I'll go into some specific examples, is we looked at all of Kabbage customers in the 6 months pre-becoming a Kabbage customer to 6 months post-becoming a Kabbage customer with adjustment for seasonality, of course. And across our entire customer base, on average, the customers' revenues increased by 72%. So the small businesses using Kabbage across the board, all audited data, they grew in revenues 72%, and that's because they are using this funding fundamentally to grow. Our primary uses are inventory. So a lot of small businesses use us to buy inventory, which they resell. Marketing programs, launching and investing in marketing programs, expanding their physical storefront, or launching a website. Buying supplies, and then hiring is also another pretty important one. So those are some of, kind of our top five uses that we see from customers. And then, we're across the board. One of my favorite customers is he's a young gentleman. His name is Justin Dunmeyer, and he runs a business called Recycle Devices. So he's up on our website, so you can read about him. But he started off generating $10,000 per month in sales. And after starting to work with Kabbage, he has now, on a consistent basis, more than doubled that and is over $20,000 per month. Another, which I think is pretty cool, right? Another company. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, that's good. Let's keep going.
Yeah. Another gentleman I really like who runs a medical devices company, his name is Joe Rootbart. He borrowed $20,000 specifically to expand his sales force and develop marketing materials for his company, which focuses on medical device sales in healthcare. And so he was able to grow from 13 employees to 15 employees and really change his entire marketing approach. That's the primary way that he's using Kabbage. So as you look across these, the main theme is it's growth. They're taking that funding to use it to invest in their business to grow.
And I notice also that you have a bunch of tools. You have estimators and scheduling tools and so forth like that, calculators that help people understand the process. But once I pull in that data feed, and I noted that in terms on the site you talk about data feeds from business checking accounts, from PayPal, from Intuit, from eBay, Amazon,
yeah.
Xero, all over the place. So once I pull that data in, before I've taken a loan, is there some way that I can get benefit of the fact that I've shared that data with you? What does Cabbage do to sort of give me that data back and help me understand the business?
Well, it's interesting. We do a couple of things, particularly on the social media front. The initial approval with Cabbage focuses more on business performance data sources.
Right.
So we use that to approve you and tell you how much you were qualified for. And for that initial set of data, what we'll do is we will tell you if we think that you can qualify for more, we will encourage you to add additional data sources so that we can, for example, see your revenue in offline channels as well as online if you only linked online data sources. And then right. A secondary benefit that we have is after you have become a customer, we also give you the opportunity to link your Facebook and your Twitter data. And then we monitor that information to understand the health of your business, because what we have found is that small businesses really use social as their CRM tool. And so we do an assessment to understand things like, are the small businesses regularly interacting with their customers? Are they responding in a timely manner? Are they being helpful? Are they staying on top of all of their inquiries? What's the overall sentiment and nature of the inquiries? And then based on that, we will also extend additional funding to them based on their social media activity.
I love to hear that sort of thing. That's really innovative.
Also,
see, because it tells you a lot about the health of the business if they've got an engaged community.
Exactly. And one of the things we're doing is we do monthly educational seminars. So this month we are doing a webinar to teach our small businesses PR tips for how to grow your business by leveraging PR. And then next month we're going to be featuring a tax expert. So that's pretty important as part of who the company is all about.
Now, we've only got about a minute before the break. Have you received broad support from the government here in the U.S.? Because I know Funding Circle in the U.K. has had some strong support from local government. Has there been support for Cabbage here in the U.S.?
We've had some conversations at the federal level with the Treasury Department, and they really like what we do. So very, very supportive. In fact, our CEO, Rob, spoke on a panel that the Treasury had about 4 months ago, and they were very, very complimentary about this whole mission here that we're talking about of opening up access to capital to small businesses. I mean, what I don't want to get lost is that small businesses are so important to our economy. They're, the numbers are pretty staggering. They're 57% of the workforce in the U.S. and produce half of the GDP. So if you can increase that access to capital to small businesses and they're using it to grow their business, they're actually investing in their business, that is a really positive equation for what happens to the economy.
Fantastic. Well, thank you. Thank you for joining the show today. Now, what I'd like to do, Victoria, and with Ami as well as we come back after the break, is talk about where we see this going 5 to 10 years out. So if you guys can stick around after the break, we'll get into, we'll put our futurist hats on and see where that takes us. You're with Brett King. We've just been talking to Victoria from the CMO from Cabbage Inc. And we'll be right back after this brief break.
The business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
Your bank's customers expect comprehensive, convenient, and consistent service when and where they need it. A mobile app is a great start, but with so many devices and operating systems out there, it can be hard to keep up with demand. That's why today's leading banks count on the Kony Multichannel Experience Cloud. With Kony, you can design, develop, and manage multi-channel apps from one integrated platform. Build an app once, and with one click, you can deploy it securely across all digital channels, phones, tablets, desktop, and more. That means more efficient for you and a better experience for your customers. Want to get to market fast? Explore Kony's range of ready-to-run apps, including retail, commercial, and private banking. With features like person-to-person transfers, targeted campaigns, built-in integrations, and cutting-edge compliance, Kony apps provide the framework and flexibility you need to rise above the competition. Go beyond first-generation mobile banking. Visit kony.com/BK to launch your multi-channel strategy. That's kony.com/BK.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to Breaking Banks, featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to breakingbanksradio@gmail.com. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back. This is the final segment of Breaking Banks for this week. We are coming to you live. This is Thursday, February the 6th. I'm actually on the West Coast today, out in San Francisco. We've got... Amy, you're in New York today, right?
I'm in Philly today.
Oh, sorry, Philly. Sorry. We said that before. I don't know why. And Victoria, where are you based?
I am in San Francisco.
Okay, so we're not far from each other. So before the break, I just introduced the topic, but this part of the show, we always like to sort of put our futurist hats on, look 5 to 10 years out, and talk about how the business of banking, or in this case, small business lending and helping small businesses grow, is going to be changed through technology, a customer adoption of technology, new ways of thinking about the problem. And I really like to explore some of the things that are emerging in this respect that are going to start to change the way this side of the business works. So, Amy, in terms of your experience and the things that you're looking at, where do you think some leaps and bounds will take place over the next 5 to 10 years that are really going to change the way small businesses get access to credit, or the way these small businesses can leverage funding sources to grow?
Yeah, so I think that the million-dollar question is, will there be a path where we will at some point see some convergence between the banks and between the really neat technologies like Cabbage and others that have come out. So the reality today is that you can go get a loan with Cabbage or other players, and it's very fast, and it saves a lot of aggravation of going to apply for a loan for the bank. The flip side of that is if you can endure the pain of the bank process and get through it, it's going to be hugely cheaper for the small business or the entrepreneur. And so one thing is for them is to understand that choice. And then the other question is, will banks start to slowly adopt some of these technologies? Will they start to buy some of these technologies? Will there be things that will happen where the banks that can get money cheaper to lend will start to adopt these things, and or the alternative lenders will get more sophisticated and more competitive so that their prices can drop.
Right. So it sort of equals levels the playing field a bit more between the traditional banks, the lenders, and these new alternative sources, because there's much lower friction in terms of the access to capital. Is that what you're suggesting?
Correct. And where will it all end up? So, the big banks going to buy cabbage and deploy them. The truth of the reality is that the much more either old-fashioned or longer process of reviewing all the banks and the tax statements, et cetera, et cetera. If you can go through it, you get a much cheaper loan. So,
right, but that process is unwieldy. That's really where the process is broken for customers today, because it takes, you know, you've got to jump through so many hoops and there's so much friction. So what I love about Cabbage and others working on this is that, you know, they lower the friction. I've always said about Square that one of the greatest innovations of Square is not necessarily turning your phone or your iPad into a cash register or a credit card POS terminal, but it was just simply the reduction of friction in onboarding merchants that was their huge innovation. And I think
and Brett, I'm agreeing with you, and I love what Cabbage does, but I think what's important for the market and everyone to understand, because it will make us all better, is I have a choice of a consumer when I'm driving down the road for lunch. I can run into McDonald's. I'll have my lunch in a minute, and it won't be particularly healthy, but it'll be quick, and I'll be on my way. Or if I want to take an hour and sit down for a proper healthy meal, I can do that also.
Yep.
And it's just a different experience. It's great now that if I want to go get a loan really quickly and rapidly in a new cool way, that's great. But I'm going to pay one price for that, and it's going to be one type of loan. Or if I've planned and prepared accordingly, and I can go get a loan the old-fashioned way, and I'm eligible for one, which not everybody is, I'm going to have a loan that is going to be much healthier and much cheaper for my business. So. Yeah. At some point, hopefully, those two options will get closer to each other. But right now, they're very different, and you're comparing really an end product. It's like comparing an apple and a zucchini in terms of what you get out of it as a small business owner or an entrepreneur.
So, Victoria, how quickly do you think the changes that you guys have made to that onboarding process of the customer and the risk assessment process of the customer, which you've used data and you know, these data sources to make extremely efficient, you know, do you see that we're going to start to be able to move the needle sort of across the industry, that becomes the benchmark? Or do you think that we're going to start to see technology-based providers like Cabbage further differentiate themselves on process and ease of use, and that there'll be a bit of a gap between the traditional banks who, you know, maybe as Ami has said, that it's a safer option, or perceived as a safer option, where, you know, for these millennials starting businesses and things like that, they're like, well, you know, I don't care about that. I want a fast and efficient process here, and mm-hmm. that's what I'm going to be going after.
I don't think it will be either or. My prediction is that first, you will see some smart banks leverage and license platforms like the Cabbage platform for their underwriting and decisioning, and that's not 5 years out. It will be coming much sooner. And then I think yep. other banks are looking at and thinking about how to use this massive volume of alternative data and may start to incorporate it over time. So I think that you will start to see the term quote-unquote alternative lending become a little bit more mainstream, because I do think that that smart banks are paying attention to it and want to provide a better, faster, and more seamless experience to their customers. I also think, if I were to give you a prediction of, like, really 5 years out, that that the government will much more seriously look at and provide access to low-cost capital to the alternative lenders as it does to the banks today. That would be probably one of my biggest wishes.
Yeah, if that happened, it would be terrific. The issue we all have to realize is that those banks, part of the reason the cabbages are out there and doing so well is that the banks have regulators to deal with. And any underwriting changes or any process changes or any methodology changes have to go through those regulators. And that's like slowly pulling every tooth out of your mouth manually. And it's partially logic for it. It's grandma's money sitting in their deposits, which is why their cost of capital is so much lower than, say, a cabbage's cost of capital or another player's. So that's why I think it's hard to that's why the markets are so disparate now, and it's hard to clearly predict how they will converge. Hopefully they will over time, but or it might just be that small businesses will have different choices, and it won't be one fit all. And my hope is that the alternative lenders will start to work with their clients to reach a path to bankability. I mean, anyone who can pay 6% or 5% for money instead of 30 or 40% for money, that's a good thing if you get there, because you can afford to grow your business faster and develop faster. So if the alternative lenders work to build products that let customers or their entrepreneurs use it as a stepping stone, that's a development I'd love to see.
So one of the arguments we get in respect to why small businesses should work with banks, instead of for example, going down and getting payday loans or other things like that, is that banks can give them advice on how to improve their business and so forth. Now, I think we'd all agree that at a medium sized business or a large corporate business, then there'd be a lot more of availability to constructive advice about how to grow your business than for small businesses. So what I'm interested in is, what do you think about tools emerging that will help small businesses better understand the dynamics of the business and start to really understand the levers that they can use for growth and efficiency and things like that? What I'm thinking of is, we've seen this huge boon in PFM or personal financial management tools in retail, but I'd love to hear your thoughts in terms of how advice is going to be delivered and distributed through tools and technology for small businesses that help them grow in the near term. Maybe Victoria, do you want to start with that one?
Well, okay. This is maybe one spot where I don't fully, I'm not fully with you. I don't see that in terms of banks really focusing on helping to educate and sort of guide their small businesses in growing. What are you thinking about? So I can fully answer
the
question.
Right now, what you do is you take all this data in, and you're helping people get access to capital to grow their business. But and you've got blogs and things like that. But what other tools are going to come to bear to help small businesses grow, do you think? And advise them day to day.
I mean, one of the things that we will be showing them in the future, besides what I covered earlier, which is these seminars that we're doing that help them basically take and tackle every single area of their business, right? Like this month is taxes, last month was PR, then we're going to cover social media. So it's a huge, huge focus for Cabbage. Right. To help these businesses grow through education.
I'm going to have to jump in, Victoria, because we are going to run out of time.
Yeah.
We've got about a minute left. So I wanted to say thank you to both of you for coming on the show. Just tell us, Victoria, how can people find out more about Cabbage?
Oh, yeah. Just go to cabbage.com, and that's Cabbage with a K. So K-A-B-B-A-G-E.
Right. And Ami, where can we find out more about your thoughts in respect to small business lending and advice?
Yeah, please visit us at multifunding.com.
Well, great. Thank you both for joining us. We have a great show lined up for next week. More lending. We're going to be talking to Lending Club and LendUp. So make sure you stay tuned for Breaking Banks next week. You've been with Breaking Banks on Voice America. I'm your host, Brett King. And thanks to Victoria and Ami for joining us this week. I'll see you next week, guys.
Thanks so much. Bye.
You've been listening to Breaking Banks with host Brett King. Please be sure to join us again next Thursday at noon Pacific time, 3 p.m. Eastern time on the Voice America Business Channel. We'll explore more changes and challenges next week.